You are listening to a Science Actually production.
I want to thank all of my mentors that have fueled my passions. People like Artemis Westenberg, Steve Sherman, the multitude of astronauts and aerospace professionals I've met at conferences such as this, and especially Janet Ivey, your director of education and former president of Explore Mars. She has educated, encouraged, and guided me to this field, and her passion is contagious. She has encouraged myself and tens of thousands of children across the country to think, to follow our passions, think big thoughts, chase big dreams, and to work hard for our goals. She and all of you are inspiring myself and my generation to get to space one day, and your assistance and motivation is life-changing for us. Thank you.
I found this clip and I was just blown away. I mean, we have to find some way to get this Janet Ivey person on our show.
If you know, I don't know, no way you can get someone that awesomely inspirational on our tiny little show.
No, surely not. They would be far too busy.
Oh, but I'm not far too busy, guys. I'm right here. I heard your call across the eons, and I said, sure, I'll come running. As soon as I heard Lucas's voice, how sweet is that? I've known that kid. So he would have been at my camp in 2019 in Toms River, New Jersey. He had just turned 6. And normally I go, hey, parents, they've got to be 8 to 12. That's my jam. But again, you know, I'm there for a particular venue and they said yes to lots of young ones. And later I would find out, many years later, I found out that the mom thought that I must not be paying attention, that something must be wrong at the camp, because all of Lucas's kindergarten year, every day she would get a phone call because he's beautifully ADHD and brilliant and, you know, and so the first day goes by, the second day goes by, she's like, Lucas, what is happening? I've heard from no one. Are you even at the camp? Are you running around? Like, what is happening? And so this most beautiful thing happened, I guess, by Wednesday. She's like, I don't understand it, Lucas. I've gotten a call every day. What is going on? He's like, don't worry about it, Mom. Janet loves me. Aww. And again, right? Aww. It's like, I know. So how beautiful is it now that 5 years later, he's 11 and he got to speak at the Human to Mars Summit and then ended with that beautiful tribute. And so, yeah, pretty amazing.
That is amazing. Amazing. It's unbelievable. It's awesome. Just completely mind-blowing. So for the folks listening, welcome to another episode of Science Actually Presents The Nerd and the Scientist with, as usual, myself, Kobe Rose, Benjamin Salas, Nerd and the Scientist. But today we have a special guest joining us, Janet Ivey, who, as you are hearing, is this incredibly inspiring STEM or space educator who, honestly, I wish I had had more teachers, mentors, people in my life like you, because I was that ADHD kid growing up. And it was always the case that, like, that rare teacher once in a while who so to speak, knew what to do with me, there'd be no complaints, I would be learning, it would be this incredible environment. But that doesn't always happen within, like, a standard educational framework. So how did you end up, I mean, it's amazing the work that you do, how did you end up, like, starting this and realizing that this niche was there or was necessary?
Mm-hmm. It is a crazy, windy path. So my undergrad, my bachelor's degree is in music and theater. And so I came to Nashville. I was in a group called Summer Rose and Ivy. We were on the pitch sheets for Mercury Records. They had just signed Shania Twain and Toby Keith. Our little trio was going to be next. The Mercury and Polygram merged. And our deal went away. But at the time, I was also working at a theme park doing a show called the Opryland Kids Club. I grew up in rural West Tennessee, where if if I had known that there was such a thing called dance, I'm sure that I would have, like, you know, that just wasn't available to me. So the reason that I'm hosting and kind of like doing this kids show is that while I could sing and I could act, I couldn't dance my way out of like, pay attention to the face, everybody. Yeah, not the feet. It's like, I remember the first things where somebody goes, pot au beret. And I'm like, I don't have any. Do you know what I mean? I just didn't know what they meant. And but what I did is the first day that I walked into this job, I have all of these like 8 to 12-year-olds like, hi, da-da-da-da. And you're like, what's your name? And my inner 10-year-old was just at home. And what has been beautiful is I'm still in touch with most of those kids and from those 5 years. And it was like between 1992 and 97. And so our deal goes away, but I'm not that sad about it because I'm like, so that means I still get to work with these kids. And as someone who's never been able to have biological kids, so this is kind of like that other interesting part of the story, right? I've never had any bio kids of my own, but I have loved so many from around the globe. And I looked around about mid 95, 96 and thought, all right, the park was coming to a close. They were selling it off. They're going to build a mall. A terrible decision for Nashville. But I was like, wow, what else could I do with this? So I had a fifth grade teacher, and I have to give props to her. Her name is Miss Ernestine Yarbrough Jones, and she is the reason, she is my reason why I love the solar system. She was that teacher that saw this goofy, quirky kid and like, hey, Janet, we're going to bring a telescope to this Friday night thing. And I don't have a clue what everybody else was doing, but I was out on the playground with these women in their bell bottoms, like staring up and looking at constellations. And for them, I remember Miss Ernestine Yarbrough Jones was African American. Miss Carolyn Davis was this beautiful redheaded, like Irish gal, but bell bottoms. And they're showing me Cassiopeia and they're showing me moons of Jupiter. And I am like, I want to be smart like these ladies. And so really, it's like, wow. I have to go all the way back to fifth grade to say that's the love of kind of like my love of space and science and that, because she would often come and say, Janet, science isn't just for the boys, it's for the girls too. And even though I still had this very, very great passion for music and theater and all those kinds of things, I never really got rid of that love of space and science. So late 90s, I'm looking around. Well, the only people doing science are Bill Nye, the science guy. And I don't know if you guys saw the show Beekman's World. It was fantastic, super funny, but Beekman's World like had a girl sidekick. Oh, what do you mean by that? And I'm like, oh, where are the girls who are touting science, who are the leaders, right? So I sort of like planted my flag there, decided I would call it Janet's Planet. So in the US, we also had Schoolhouse Rock. So they had this great song, Inner Planet, Janet, she's a galaxy girl. And I always thought that was like so cool, but it couldn't be that. Of all things, the dad of one of the kids I was working with said, let's look it up on trademark. I didn't know how to do it. And nobody in the late 90s had Janet's Planet. So I quickly snatched it up, not even really knowing how I was going to get from this idea to something real. And maybe that's the lesson for anybody out there dreaming something audacious, is like, just manifest it, man. Just put it out there. I'm going to do it. I don't know how yet. I'll build the parachute on the way down. And so after I kind of like trademarked it, not really knowing the way, I ended up helping a producer at local public television. She was casting for this ITV series and she hadn't found the kids. And I was like, ah, I got the rainbow over here. Let me send you my 5 best. They all booked the job and they're like, I want to know what you do. So in short order, she hired me, opened the door, and we began producing some interstitials for public television. And so again, it's grown from this thing that started out as just 1 to 2 minute segments on public television in the United States to then we were like, hey, we should maybe do a touring show and go to performing arts centers and I'll do a one woman show about the solar system. And then how about we start camps? And then the blue sky or the silver lining of COVID. If somebody had said to me in January of 2020, hey, why don't you think about doing Zoom classes? I would have gone, how about I punch you in the throat? Because that's not wow. You know what I mean? It just like I had done it, and it's like the one off every once in a while was like, okay. But I thought, who would want to do that? Well, funny enough, it's like, you know what I mean? It's like, if you'd asked me that, it didn't occur to me that that was, could be a thing. Then by March of 2020, shutdown is happening, and I'm kind of going stir crazy. And on a Monday, it would have been right before St. Patrick's Day, because that's the first day I had my first online class in 2020. I must have been about that Monday. I just was like sitting down, like crying in my coffee, going, I can't take this kind of isolation. I like people and everything. So I put it out there and said, hey, who wants to learn about this? The first day I had 26 kids. The second day I had 75. And again, wow. I thought, well, I'll just do this for the next couple of weeks while this thing passes. And then 9 weeks later, we'd had almost 1,200 kids join us from around the globe, South Africa, Australia, like Wales, South Korea, China. It was Pakistan. It was weird. And I was like, you know what? I would never have thought that this to be a path. And then a friend from NASA calls and says, hey, there's a grant you should apply for, and it's everything you're already doing. And that, thank God, was how I got through 2020 and 21, was underneath the NASA grant, where at that, by September 2020 through May of 2021, I Zoomed with almost 7,600 kids from around the country and globe, and wow. Made sure I was making sure that I met all my metrics and stuff. So all of those experiences, working with kids in the 90s, like loving space and science, kind of figuring out a way to communicate that. And then it just keeps growing. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm crossing my fingers. I'm working with a company down in Brazil on an animated Janet's Planet. That way, no more what? Bow ties. I'll be young forever.
What?
Oh my gosh.
What?
What?
It just keeps growing and growing, and now you have what? Like,
no, it just keeps exploding Emmys. And exploding. This is huge.
I'm a supernova. I like that, Benjamin. Oh. I like that I'm a supernova.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well... Definitely touching on my passions there. We've done whole episodes about supernovae, and we'll continue to do more. But gosh, I'm dumbfounded. I mean, it's just so incredible to have like taken these opportunities and not just made the most of them, but like done things that other people are not able to do to have this incredible positive impact on tens of thousands of young people. And like I've understood that some of them have gone on to actually have successful careers in the entertainment industry, like a certain person who's been appearing on SNL quite a bit recently.
I know. How like crazy you? Is that? No. Within 2 weeks of, like, I got home from teaching camps, James Austin Johnson is playing Zanies, our local comedy club. And he was so sweet to mention me in this local article in the Nashville Scene. So I met James Austin Johnson. And it was like probably it was part of a public television ITV series, was I was playing Miss Ferris. And so even then I was playing a teacher. I couldn't get away from it. And again, the through line of most of the acting stuff I've done, I got for years, guys, I made money being a soccer mom. I was even in a commercial before Miley Cyrus was Hannah Montana. Miley played my daughter, and I used to go out and like coach her. Like I remember when she auditioned for the movie Dreamer, Dakota Fanning got it. But so I would occasionally, she'd take some acting classes and stuff like that. But I mean, James Austin Johnson was this dry, funny kid. And so I taught basically just acting classes to kids. And they turned out to be more improv classes, because that's where, if you could get a kid out of any of their inhibitions doing improv, then you don't really want to ever over direct a kid, because what they do naturally is already so beautiful. So, but sometimes they just needed a little kind of push. And if you kind of got them to do something funny and extreme, then when you brought them back to whatever scene you wanted them to do, they were pitch perfect. So Austin and other friends would come. So I had this opportunity at this little theater in Franklin, Tennessee. I was already doing a show, an adult show called Baby, and that was some theater production. And the director of the theater comes and is like, hey, we don't have anything going on Saturday mornings. What do you propose? And it's like, the Janet's Planet Comedy Hour. And so we would come in and like we did ridiculous things. Like we would take something, you know, like kind of like standard, like a Carol Burnett skit, but then kind of rewrite it and make it about space and science. Or we take like the, I'll have the hams and bacon and eggs and ham and ham and ham and ham and eggs. Anyway, we do crazy kind of fun stuff like that and just kind of turn it on its head. And we had a built-in audience. Every kid invited their, you know, grandparents and aunts. So it was a tiny theater, so we could fill 100 seats pretty quickly. And I remember we're kind of like having class in kind of rehearsals, if you will. And James Austin Johnson goes, hey, I want to do a stand-up routine. I was like, okay. And he's like, really? I was like, yeah, but you better be there. And I said, do you want to do it in front of us before? He's like, no, not really. I was like, okay. Because I thought, I mean, again, it's like, it's going to be precious. He's like 10 or 11 and he's going to do a stand-up routine. And it was amazing. And so I'll never forget, this is a couple of years ago. My husband and I are sitting somewhere in Colorado on vacation and I get this call and I'm like, Austin, when he moved to LA, would call me every once in a while. One time he was supposed to show up for a friend of ours, like be the groomsman in a wedding, but he had a call back for something, a movie where George Clooney was one of the actors. And I was like, Austin, Daniel and Hannah are going to be married for a long time. You can send a really great gift, but it's like, in my opinion, it's like, hey, this is a moment in time. Seize the opportunity. You've got the call back and I appreciate your loyalty to your friend. And it's like, I know that they'll be a bit disappointed, but get here when you can. It's like, if you can't make it to the rehearsal dinner, be here and, you know, walk in like 5 seconds before you need to be the groomsman. And he booked the job. So occasionally over time he would do this, but I'm sitting there, he calls and is like, hey, NBC has had this NDA and I can't really talk about it, but I've just been cast on SNL. And I'm like, oh dang. My God. So then I had this other kid named Jenna Claire Mason, who's in a couple of Hallmark movies and has played the Good Witch in Wicked on Broadway for almost 6 years. And she was a student when her not very inspired theater coach in high school would barely make her like a third tree on the left. And she would come to class and I'm like, don't pay any attention to the doubters. You're a Broadway baby, you. I just know it. So anyway, she had a benefit concert. So within a span of 2 weeks, I got to see two grown-up kiddos of mine doing amazing things. And again, plenty of other people sprinkled goodness inside them. And so I think sometimes when people go, what is it that you do, Janet? And I'm like, ah. I'm not really the one monolithic thing. I'm kind of a galaxy of things. And so it's like, I think it's a lot like Da Vinci, right? He let his art inform his science, his science inform his art. And I'm always going to love theater and drama and stuff like that. And if I can encourage a kid in that way, you know, and or I've got my first aerospace engineer heading to college this fall. Next year, another mechanical engineer. I have had a couple of girls inspired to be astrophysicists. So they've already graduated. So yeah, I'll have some actors and, you know, those kinds of people out there, and then and musicians, and then I'll have some scientists and some astrophysicists. And all I'm asking is that one day when they move to Mars, they take Granny with them.
Jeez Louise.
Oh,
jeez, Louise.
Oh, jeez. I'm just, yeah, I'm dumbfounded. And I think the most impressive thing for me is to kind of connect the dots on the two things that you touched on there, because this idea of not stifling the creativity when it comes to improv, right? Mm-hmm. I see that in every bit of content that comes out of any of the kids who are in your camps or in your programs, like this kid holding up two pieces of cardboard stuck together with a bottle cap. And it's like, well, the astronauts go in here and the food goes in here. And it's like the standard framework of a school system would be like, no, 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 you have to use this material and this is the device. And it's too limiting. And you're just letting these kids unlock the creativity that they already have. And it's brilliant. And right. That is a perfect, I think, segue.
Well, thank you for that. I think it's a little bit, though, I didn't realize what I was doing for a while, because it's like, if I found that the kids were really engaged in it, I didn't want to stop it. And so somebody recently said, how did you get so good at the open-ended assignment? And I'm like,
just let them roll with it.
Just roll with it. I mean, this summer we were making space roller coasters, and I was telling them, like, hey, on Mars, it won't be as fun as here on Earth. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, yeah, it's like, you know, the slope, it'll go slower. It's like, it'll be 62% slower than a roller coaster here on Earth. And they're like, some were like, that'll be good, because they kind of scare me here on Earth. And I'm like, you'll be happy. But it was like days and days that they wanted to go back and build this space roller coaster. So thank you. I think it is because, honest to goodness, my creativity and my love of space and science sit side by side and interact. And I never want to stop that. It's like, because who knows? It's like, I always tell kids, I don't care if you become a tap dancing pharmacist or tap dancing astrophysicist. I want you to love it all, experience it all, because the same brain that conceives the symphony is also the same brain that, you know, creates the next grand innovation.
I love it. And I have a great example of one of these kind of brilliant brains that, instead of our regular ad break that Benjamin and I do, we're going to play you a little clip from one of these brilliant, brilliant young minds.
I loved all the clips. They're great.
It was so hard to choose from. But this one, I think, is a great example of what we were just talking about.
Hubble measures ISS. Stars all have a nucleus. Proxima Centauri, Earth, Mars, Mercury, Venus, Neptune, Uranus. There are so many planets. We didn't start space science. Oh, no. It was here since Venus. AI might defeat us. We didn't start space science. It's been here forever. It's planet not real. Galaxies, cosmodromes, Neil Armstrong, image sites, mega failures, and planetary distances. We didn't start space science. Pluto's not a planet, but it should be one. Oh, my
goodness. Charlie, my beautiful Charlie. And here's the great story about Charlie, is that this was his second year to come to my camp. Last year when he came, he barely spoke a word. And he was in his own world, and definitely neurodivergent and everything. But this year, he had gone to a theater camp before he came back to my camp. So we open up the week, and it's like, again, this comes from some folks, some friends of mine from South Africa, where we create this thing. It's like, okay, we're going to create our spacecraft of safety. How do you all think that we should behave inside our spacecraft of safety? So virtually, the kids are coming up with their roles. I'm not giving them to them, right? It's like, how should we behave? What are your expectations for how this should look? And so I was like, all right, now that we know what that is, raise your hand, maybe like if somebody has a good idea that you're collaborating, et cetera, et cetera. And so I said, well, what do you think should be, I don't know, a consequence of maybe straying from our spacecraft of safety if anybody's unkind or does something, blah, blah, blah. And so they're like, they should leave the camp. And I was like, whoa, brothers, sisters, that's a little too extreme. I'm talking about something lighter. I said, how about you sing an apology as an opera singer? That's when Charlie stood up and goes, I love to sing opera. I said, can you sing an opera song about what a great day we're going to have? And he's like, sure. I'm like blown away. This is a kid that barely spoke last summer. He gets up there, we're going to have a great day. Anyway, it was hilarious. It was beautiful. So by day three, every day, he's like, you know, Miss Jana, I can also rap. And I was like, break it down. So he did something, and I was like, you know what, Charlie, you're gonna have to like perform something on Friday at our graduation. Here's what's profound about how beautiful his beautiful brain is. He went into this next first rotation of our camp and took out a piece of paper, and he scribed it all down, wrote it all down, didn't have like the song playing anywhere, but wrote all of that in that first 45 minutes of that first rotation, and then performed it on that Friday. So just the fact that somewhere that song, that melody was, I don't know when he'd listen to it. And it was pretty special. Only because to see what I'm the other beautiful thing is when I have the opportunity to stay in the lives of these kids, I always say, I'm here if you need me. I want to be, come back, et cetera. They get to choose and if they want to accept that invitation. But to be able to see that arc and the growth and where that kind of like is as big as I can hold my arms open for whatever your particular special awesome might be, is that to see that kind of like go, oh, wow, we're growing. Like, you know what I mean? It's like they are finding their own version of their confidence and their power. And I think that is what we don't do enough in standardized education. And I get it. It's like, I've got friends who do beautiful work in the system, but it's like, you've got a lot of kids. And it's like, so I have the pleasure and the privilege of coming in these informal settings, and really there aren't any rules. There are no wrong answers, you know, again, as far as your creativity goes, but then we can start to break down. It's like, but let's think about how you're thinking and let's find any holes there. Let's clarify, let's get to, and then it's the invitation. They're halfway there. And then they're like, oh, that is true. Not the thing I was thinking. So you can guide them in ways. I don't know. It's fun for me. I think sometimes when people, I had a couple of teachers travel with me this year and they're like, do you want us to organize it? I was like, what do you mean organize? Silly yous. No, it's like, the best compliment, guys, I got all summer long, we're making the space roller coasters out of basically toilet paper rolls and paper towel rolls and other just plastic bits that whatever I found in boxes or whatever, cereal boxes. And so they're working on it. And I'm like, anybody need any help, tape, prompt, et cetera, if you're stuck. And this one girl, Madison, goes, you know what, Miss Janet? And I was like, what? And she said, this is a lot like Minecraft. And I was like, say more. And then this other kid, Carter, who's very quiet, very serious, who's been at the camp, this will be his third year. He's like, you know, you're right. And I was like, I want to know how Janet's planet is like Minecraft. And they go, well, you got to go over here and find your supplies. And then you got to come back and build it only IRL in real life. And I was like, I have won the day. I am like Minecraft. Only we do it in real life.
IRL. Oh my God.
IRL.
Biggest compliment to get from the youths.
Wow.
Isn't that funny?
That's so incredible.
I want to be like Minecraft.
Man. I know. Like, you know, it's one of those times where it's like, I don't have those fancy glasses where you go, beep, let me film this or something. But it's one of those things that you tuck away in your heart and you go, these kids are engaged. They're having fun. They're relating it to something. They're not staring at a screen. And to anyone who's listening, especially parents out there, here's just a little nudge. Let your kids go through the recycling bin. Tell them to make a spacecraft or an alien ship or, you know, a space roller coaster. Collect all the toilet paper rolls and paper towel rolls you can, and just let them get their hands on it. Because in a way, we're teaching physics, right? We're teaching potential energy to gravitational acceleration to kinetic energy. We're teaching angular momentum and slope and all of those kinds of things. But it's like they're learning how, because a couple of times they're like, but the ping pong ball was their little cart. It's not rolling right. It's like, do you think we should increase the angle? Oh yeah, it works better. Cause then they, you know what I mean? Then that potential energy starts to really, with that gravitational acceleration, begins to do all the other things you want it to do. So it's an introduction on a very, very simplistic level to physics. But it's like, once you understand how it works, then all the other math can come. I don't know. I certainly don't have a degree in educational pedagogy or anything like that. So much of what I try to do is just go, how do we get these kids engaged? If I get them really curious, then they can begin to open various doors and walk down many a trail. But I think we have to make it like it's the most exciting adventure story ever told. And that's how you sneak it in. They don't even know. They're like, I don't know. Oh, I'll totally follow this crazy lady.
There's kids that are going to carry a memory of moving a ping pong ball like a roller coaster through some contraption they made. They're going to carry that forever. And they're going to do who knows what in their careers. They're going to always look back as that's going to be an example that they've carried with them. That's just, it's simple.
It's very simple. No, and it's like, even you can make a lunar lander out of paper plates and those 3-ounce little bathroom cups and a couple of cotton balls and straws and index cards. And you show them a few examples of like legacy hardware of the Apollo lunar lander, talk them through the lunar limbs, et cetera. And, oh, I think we need retro propulsion. And they put cups underneath. Oh, we need a ladder, et cetera. And all of a sudden you would be stunned and amazed what a kindergarten first grader will come up with. And again, you show them all the pictures. They all agree that the Starship is too tall and will fall over since the moon has no gravity. I don't know that they're not wrong, but you know what I mean? Smarter people than me are working on that. Sorry, Elon. Sorry, SpaceX. I'm just saying that kids go, it's a little tall. And what if the elevator doesn't work, right? It's just simple materials. And I think that's that thing. If they can build it, see it, and that's where their kind of like confidence grows. I stop saying I don't say words like perfect or genius. I mean, if I do use it, it's like, I mean it as wholeheartedly as possible, but like, how brilliant, how amazing your mind. Are you going to win a Nobel Prize one day? Should I call you doctor? And it's amazing what you will see. This kid will start to beam like crazy. Mm-hmm. And because kids will become what you tell them they're becoming. And, you know, it's like, how many times have we seen kids who haven't fared well because society has never given them a chance or never told them you're good, great, and awesome. But, you know, it's like, what a brilliant mind. And again, sometimes too, for the really super smart, gifted students of mine who are like quick and want to finish fast, I'll be like, oh, well, that's fantastic. I mean, you're amazing. But what else can you do? I want to really be impressed. How much more can you impress me? And then sometimes if they're like, no, we're good, it kind of works, then you make them part of the teaching team. Because two kids did that in Pennsylvania. And it was good. I mean, what they did was fine. I mean, they accomplished the goal of the roller coaster. But when they became part of the instructors and the mentors to the other kids who were struggling, that's when they came up with their more brilliant ideas. So sometimes it is also looking for moments of where, how can I plug you in? How can I make you an accomplice to the solution? They don't even know. They don't even know. They think I'm just saying, Miss Janet needs extra help. I appreciate it so much because I just can't get to everybody. Thank you for helping. So, yeah.
It's awesome.
It's brilliant. I think just like this, giving kids this freedom to play in this unstructured way, and then these slight course corrections and adjustments that ultimately it's still within their own hands, and it's building their confidence and leading to just lifetime confidence and also like a lifetime of curiosity and creativity.
The best thing that a kid can ever tell me, if I come over and I'm feeling like, I can tell they're stuck. Hi, do you need a prompt? And they're like, I don't know, maybe. And then I'll throw out 3 or 4 things and they'll go, nah, I'm good. I think I'm going to come up with something else. Love that. And or whenever I'll go, all right, I'm just going to give you a couple ideas. You don't have to use it. And I'll throw out 3 or 4 ideas and one person will go, you know what? I'm going to call you Janet. And I'm like, this happened this summer, this darling kiddo. And I was like, I said, what are you going to call me? She goes, I'm going to call you Miss Idea. Oh,
I almost like that better than Janice Planet.
Miss Idea.
Sounds awesome. That's like a huge vault of potential. Mrs. Idea.
Yeah. Miss Idea. Dang. And she, I was like, I said, why is that, baby? She goes, because you have some really good ideas. I was like, well, thank you. But again, so you're just trying to find those moments. You're not trying to fix it or do it for them. And again, just an admonition to anybody out there. There was a beautiful kid named Jaden who, let's see here, made me this alien named Bob. And Alien was one, and Bob. Jaden, I'll get it right here. Sorry, you're talking to me or something. Anyway, so Jaden was the one that was quick to finish. If he wasn't super enthralled by it, he wanted to just be done and can I have my phone back? So the final day we do something called Extranaut, which is basically just build a spacecraft and a parachute that can protect a real egg. And so he was in it. Like, but it's like, I'm going, Jaden, I don't know if that egg will survive. I feel like there needs to be maybe, I don't know, what else could you think about there? So I come back and this thing is taped more than my alien friend, Bob. I mean, it was a good roll of masking tape on that sucker. So we go outside, I'm dropping it from the very top of the theater and it lands and he runs over and he at this moment is unwrapping the tape. And what I begin to watch are people start to be uncomfortable with how long it's taking him to unwrap the thing. I see the director of the theater. I even see a couple of my own volunteers. And I'm like, no. Jaden gets to have his moment. This can take as long as it takes. It's like, I'm sure that it's like the people splashing down in the Atlantic. It takes a minute or two to get them out of the capsule. So we're going to wait. But it was interesting to be the observer because I wasn't about to let them come near and then rush him when he was finally in it. And so again, yes, is it uncomfortable? You're like, and but you're like, nope, we're going to wait. We're going to wait for it. And again, one of these times where it's like anybody taking a picture, I think, had walked away. But if you guys could have seen the expression of joy that his little egg had survived, he was like, my dad really knows how to wrap Christmas presents. That's why I used a lot of tape. And I was like, well done, you. Astronaut is safe. But do you know what I mean? It's like there was this moment where great grownups, beautiful, amazing, good-hearted grownups wanted to hurry it on along. And we found that, I think, a lot in COVID. And this isn't judgment about any parent out there who would like trying to do the Zoom meeting, carry on work. Oh, sure, honey. And do it for them. But it's like now it's like hands off. It's like, let them learn how to cut with scissors. Let them learn how to find the supply. Let them actually build it. And if it falls apart, they've just figured out what doesn't work. But it's like, some of these kids that were, say, kindergarten, first, second grade during COVID are kind of having to unwrap and undo a little bit of that. Oh, it's easy. I can hand it to somebody. They'll get it done for me. Or if I just ask for what I need. Like I had a kid this summer. Can you bring me the scissors? I was like, no. He was like, what? I was like, you're closer to them. I am. Use those beautiful like legs, you little biped, and go for yourself. Be encouraged. Yay. And so really concentrating on some like self-responsibility and kind of like that self kind of like awareness of like, oh, and yeah. So I'm sometimes like halfway praying going, please, maybe nobody's watching or listening to me going, that sounded a little harsh. But I mean, I said it in a very joking manner. It's like, no, I'm not doing it because you're capable. So get up and get them because they're right there in the green caddy. Don't you feel good about yourself? You did it. Woohoo.
Yep.
So, but I think there's got to be that blend of loving space for them to create, mess up. There's a book written by a guy from Harvard named Tony Wagner. I think it's called Creating the Innovators of the Future. And in it, he says, much like you were saying, Covey, we must let our children play. And in the middle of their play, they may find their passion. And in the middle of their passion, they may find their purpose. And so really, it's like one of the things I hate it when people go, oh, I love all the little crafts you do with the kids, Janet. They're not crafts. These are hands-on, like truly kind of kinesthetic projects where there's more that we're teaching than just making the ultimate craft or whatever you think that it looks like. And so that's where, again, I don't mind that it's like, I hope, I mean, some of these kids will do things that are very, very aesthetically pleasing and artistic. One of the kids' teams that did the roller coaster, they, on the back of the cereal box was this kind of like cartoon mouth. So they cut out the mouth so the ping pong ball at the end of the ride would pop out of the mouth. They thought it was very funny. They're like, look, they got sick on the ride. I'm like... Such fifth grade humor right there. But again, it's just that thing of, I don't know, allowing. We just need to allow them to play, right?
And that one got Benjamin. You can see that he has the fifth grade sense of humor.
Well, never depart from it, Benjamin. House, never so depart.
I'm still quite attuned.
How old are your kids, Benjamin, when you talk about your
kids? Oh, they're not fifth graders anymore. My oldest just started college a couple weeks ago.
All right.
And my youngest is in eighth grade, and the middle one is a junior in high school.
And what are they interested in?
Golly, gee, the whole spectrum of things to be interested in. The oldest one is very sports oriented and business oriented. The middle one is plotting something. We're all going to vote for her, whether we like it or not, one day. And then The youngest one is also very athletic, very scoutsy, and a lot of things that you just said kind of apply to some of the experiences that he's done, again with scouts when they had to cook their own meal. No adults allowed to interfere. They just know they had to have enough food to feed their little patrol. Go do it. So there's no right or wrong as far as nutrition goes, but they have to be able to eat something at the end of lunch. And the messes they made were just horrific, but they learned this is how this cooks, and how much we need per person, and on and on and on and on. And he's a sporty scoutsy, science oriented, very secretly clever, and then the business oriented one.
And you know what? Again, it's like, good on you for being that good parent that's just allowing space, because there's no kid that's, you know, a carbon copy of any other. When I think about, you know, my own stepsons, they're all very creative, but very different. My grandkids the same way. What works for one doesn't work for the other. So you find your ways to kind of like create fun pathways with each of them. But for me, it's like, I will just say, when I get to work with kids and or I know that they've had a light bulb moment, that to me is the grandest joy. It's better than any paycheck. It's like, you know what? It's like the things that I will leave this world with will be those feelings of like, aw, I had a moment. Maybe probably the most profound thing that I read in the last 32 years of working with kids in some fashion. It was in a Time magazine, and it was a photographer who had been sent to Rwanda to catalog some of the genocide that was happening there. And so they were triaging things like not alive, barely alive, and potentially able to be helped. So he writes in this article that he's taking a picture of the not alive group. And he goes, I don't know if my eyes are playing tricks on me, but he thought he saw movement. So again, he goes to take the photograph, and he's definitely seen one of these people in the wrong group. It takes him a few hours to convince people that, yes, there might be somebody over there that needs to be moved to the barely alive. And so they bring this gentleman there. They offer him a cup of water. Well, he couldn't drink the cup, but it was drop by drop by drop over the course of 3 days before this amazing human could drink an entire cup. And he said his takeaway from that is that we are never responsible for the whole cup, but we are responsible for our one drop. And that lives in me very, very deeply, that I can't reach every kid. I won't. Not every kid is going to be attracted to my quirkiness. It'll be whomever passes my way. And if they go, that was fun. But whatever kid is in front of me or in a group that I am responsible for, I am personally feel that charge in my life that I am responsible for delivering my one drop to them in their eventual full cup. And so that to me is that admonition for all good adults and for all the, you know, would-be Mr. Rogers in the world is that please, good humans, good adults, be that good adult and human that offers your one good drop so that that kid lives on to have that, you know, multitude of experiences that have added to that cup of goodness and knowledge and kind of courage and hopefully confidence that, you know, that I think we're all supposed to add to.
It's beautiful. I think that,
that's such,
you know,
a nice message.
It's a lovely message. You're mentioning Mr. Rogers, and it's like, it was always the neighborhood. It wasn't trying to change the world and fix everything. And that can be kind of overwhelming sometimes when we look at these problems that we're trying to solve as a society or as a civilization. But if you break it down into individual droplets, like how can I affect change in my own way? You really can. And I think if people look at it that way, they'll see it's a much easier, much more doable task. So yeah, I really like that.
Yeah, it's a way better way to eat the elephant, right? Do you know what I mean? It's like, and
I've never heard that before.
It's like, because it's like, you can't eat the whole elephant. So it's like, it's basically, there's a school 5 minutes from my house, Jack Anderson Elementary, a title, you know, title one, title nine school, one of those titles, right? And they called during COVID and said, hey, we need a PBL. We need something to do for our science kids. We are so overwhelmed. We don't know what to do. So they're like, can you help? Sure thing. And so for that first year, we made our Mars habitats and we did other things along the way that built up to their final kind of PBL. And for that, it's called project-based learning, so that they were learning about space and everything along the way. And their ultimate kind of cornerstone piece was these habitats on Mars potentially. And so that was 2020, 21. So I'm about to start my fifth year of volunteering. Now everything changed this past year, because in those first couple of years I was going there pretty much hanging out at the school all day, because what else was there to do? Why not? But now that my schedule and I'm back touring and I'm on the road doing other things, it's like I'll go in and, you know, we've been able to give away space camp scholarships, et cetera. And it's like, that's in my backyard. That's what I'm responsible for, especially that, right? And it's a couple of, you know, 100 fifth graders every year. And I'll be at Kroger or somewhere. And they're like, Miss Janet. And it's like, I'm going, oh my gosh. And so I just think it's like, even if it's a kid at your work, if it's somebody who like reaches out on LinkedIn, you know, again, if you can help pass them along or help somehow encourage that, I just think that it's very much the way of Mr. Rogers, I think, and how he would do his neighborhood. Mr. Rogers is a huge, huge hero of mine. I think he spoke such truth and love. And he did a thing where he asked one time the audience to just take 60 seconds to sit there and think about all that they were grateful for. And it's interesting in our world today, if I ask a group of kids to take 60 seconds to be quiet and reflect, in about 5 seconds, somebody's giggling. Do you know what I mean? Because we just don't do that often enough to get quiet. So another thing that I'll do sometimes at camp is that we'll just get really quiet. And they're like, and somebody will inevitably go, this is a little boring, Miss Janet. Good. I think Isaac Newton was bored sitting underneath that apple tree. Then a great idea occurred to him. So we're going to learn how to sit with quiet. And I want you to figure out what bubbles up here. And it's like, it's hard in those first few days. And then we get to the 60 seconds. And then all of a sudden by day four, they're like, hey, can we do it a little bit longer today? I like how my brain feels now that it's been quiet. So just fun stuff. Again, fun, simple stuff that I think is easy enough to incorporate and to just, like, again, we know the world is noisy. There's always the social media post that we think we should be putting out there. And it's okay also to be quiet.
I love that. I think that's really great. It's really also for adults should take notice of what you just said, of just, you know, taking a moment out of your day to maybe reflect. Absolutely. Think. I think it makes a world of a difference. It's like meditation. It's great. I mean, I feel like there are a million questions I could be asking you, but I want to be conscious of your time, and you've been so generous with it today so far. I wanted just to ask you one last thing, if I could, about your education initiatives that you're doing now, because you transitioned from a different role that you were doing at Explore Mars. You were the CEO, the head of Explore Mars, and now you're involved with them in a different capacity, if I'm not mistaken. So I'd love to hear more about, like, besides these tours around the country and all the amazing work that you've spoken about, what are these new education initiatives that you're planning for us?
To be clear, I was president of Explore Mars. Chris Carberry is the CEO. Just want to make sure, fantastic human. But they approached me in 2019 to be president, and never expected, kind of like all that unfolded there in the next couple of years. So in truth, I was just burnt out. You know what I mean? Because I tried to be very high touch when somebody emailed us about something. We tried to say yes to every opportunity if I needed to host a webinar or appear, et cetera. And I loved it. I love the organization. If you're not familiar with it, I think it's one of the kindest and most accepting, beautiful organizations out there. And so when 2023 rolled around, or even 2022, I said, you know, I think this job should have term limits. You know, it's like every position needs term limits. And so they're like, stay on one more year. And then that's when J.R. Edwards, who's president now, and Tiffany Vora, who's vice president, J.R. really signed on to be there for a couple of years to really help fundraise, which is his really big, amazing gift. Tiffany, I think, will probably be the next president to come, in her brilliant brain. She's just mind-blowingly genius. So I felt like that part of my role was to kind of create a, hey, y'all, and howdy, come on over to Explore Mars. And so my role was to, like, go, come on and join us. We're fun and we're accepting and we want space to be accessible to everyone. But after those 4 years, I knew that my work life was returning to some semblance of normalcy, prior to 2019. And I said, I still want to participate. I said, but you guys know my heart. Even while I was president, education was the kind of like my total kind of like, okay, this is what we're doing it for, is for the education of the general public, but also K-12 and beyond. So we've been doing the Mars Innovation Challenge for the last 2 years, but we're going to kind of launch that early this fall. What we've done in the past 2 years is we've launched it like January, February. It just seems that it doesn't give teams long enough to really consider this. So by the end of September, you're going to hear an announcement about the Mars Innovation Challenge. Teams will have until kind of like February 15th to kind of do that. So they got a good long while. And many of these kind of like our challenges are based on some of the SDGs of the United Nations. One of the other things that I might come back to you guys and ask you to promote is on December 20th. I will be on a cruise headed to Antarctica with Daniel Fox of Future of Space, but he has asked, would I want to moderate a webinar for the world's kids with astronaut Scott Kelly, Neil deGrasse Tyson, William Shatner, Celine Cousteau, and Anne Curry. And we're going to blast it out. There will be ways for kids in the U.S. to sign up in the different platforms. We'll have it streaming to YouTube. Again, it's like, there will be a time, because that's when we'll be kind of full sail. And so it's like, even if you can't watch it live, you can watch it later. But we will be asking for students to submit questions for this illustrious, amazing team of people that I will get to ask and moderate this panel and webinar with. So I will be giving people, we'll have more information again after Labor Day and the holiday, probably again late September, first part of October, asking for kids questions from around the globe and what they would like to ask any of these great, amazing explorers.
Happy, wow. Absolutely happy to promote that.
If
when you're in Antarctica, download their podcast one time, because we have a little map of all the places on the world where people have downloaded our podcast from, and Antarctica is the only continent that's outstanding.
So we done. Consider it done, my friend. Like, if there's about to be a little ping in your map there. Yep.
That's little all pin. I want. That's all I want. As soon as I get that little ping, that's it. I'm done. I'm hanging it up. It's over.
I wanted to share it with Palmer Station because we're going to stop there. I think the scientists there at Palmer Station have a mandate from the National Science Foundation. I'll go, hey, got a podcast. Because I'm sure that there's some things that might get a little tedious out there on the big old frozen tundra. It's going to be crazy. No, it's like, again, when people ask me sometimes, Janet, how do you get invited to do all these things? I don't know. I say yes a lot more than I say no. And sometimes my husband looks at me and is like, how do you know they're not? And I'm like, I'm just assuming that everybody's part of the Good People Network. I get to speak at the United Nations on September 21st as part of UNESCO Higher Education, along with the Interstellar Foundation, who asked me to speak about basically the power of space education and how it's rocket fuel for curiosity. So I'll have my 5 minutes at the United Nations on September 21st. So I am just a lucky, lucky galaxy. That's all I can say.
Wow. Well, we are incredibly lucky to have had you join us for nearly an hour. Oh my gosh.
Well, you guys are very generous. I talked a lot. I did. You guys are going to have to go back and do a pass where you actually like get a chance to get a word in edgewise. My apologies. I just get excited about this stuff because I'm so desirous that kids and really anyone around the globe is intellectually curious. There's so much to know and that is yet still unknown. And I think that we've been given brilliant, beautiful brains to be part of the problem solvers and the kind of like detectives of how the universe works. And I just want people to get really interested in figuring things out and problem solving.
I love it. That's exactly how I think about my research as, you know, detective work, studying the cosmos, studying the universe. And you have nothing to apologize for in terms of talking. Thank you so much for sharing your passion and your just all the incredible things that you're working on with us. You are definitely head to toe a space nerd. So you fit in very well on this podcast.
Totally with the nerds, man. I've been there ever since I was in band, a band nerd, a space nerd, a quirky nerd, all of it. Yep.
Love it. Mega. Where can people find you on the interwebs if they want to see more of Janet Planet?
So definitely go to my website, janetsplanet.com. You can also find me on YouTube at Janet's Planet Official. The channel needs to be, I know, at a certain age, I would tell you how old I am, but I don't want to. But at a certain age, you go, oh, I really should probably put some content up there. But sometimes I'm so busy out there doing it. I'm on Facebook as Janet's Planet is Janet apostrophe S Planet. I am not the movie that is out there. That is not my life story that is lacking an apostrophe S. So don't be confused there. Then on Instagram, I'm because I got HACKED hacked last fall. They were demanding Bitcoin. I tried to do something really like cheeky and I did a Cash App. Like I went into Canva and created a Cash App thing and pretended like I sent them the $300 in Bitcoin they were asking for. And then they said they'd return my password. They're like, do you think we're stupid? And I was like, I plead the fifth. But anyway, so I didn't do that. And unless Meta is your sponsor, you could always edit that. There were absolutely no help. I'm pretty sure the robotic AI assistant, Stacy. She was also no help when I was trying to reclaim what was rightfully mine on Instagram. So now it is this big, long, dumb thing, and it looks a little fake, but it is me. It's Janet's Planet dot Janet Ivy Dunzine. So if you get far as Janet's Planet, no apostrophes, because that's not what Insta does. Janet's Planet dot Janet Ivy. You'll be in good. You should be finding me. You'll know me when you see me. But I'd love the follows. It was like I gathered them very organically, and so to try to go back and reformulate that is taking a minute. But I'm always happy if you can also reach out to me on LinkedIn. But yeah, even if you send a message through my website, pointing you in directions of like great resources. JPL, NASA has great STEM things. There are other teachers, pay teachers have great things. But my fun thing is if I can connect you with where you want to go, if I can in my power, I will do my best to assist. But yeah, find me, connect with me, and say hi and that you heard me on Science Actually.
Amazing. Amazing. And Benjamin, where, just as a reminder, can people find Science Actually on the interwebs?
You can find me on, as Kavi says, all the time wasters. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. Just look for Science Actually and this little logo, and that's me. well, how about you, Kavi? Where can everyone find you?
I can be found at Fun Fact Science on all the good and all the bad social media platforms. If you're looking for science or memes or other wonderful science communicators like Janet, who I love to share content of all of the awesome people out there who are doing incredible work. Thank you again, Janet, for joining us. And
no, thank you, Kavi and Benjamin, for having me. It's like, again, we are all in this together, right? And it's a beautiful thing to be part of Team Human.
So it's been an amazing day of discovery and science, and we practice good safety.
Oops.
And got a little messy, which is, kind of par for the course. Any last things you want to tell everybody about why they should love science, Astrobeant?
Well, you should really love science because it's really fun. And if you're a girl and you live somewhere where girls aren't allowed to have jobs or go to schools that are science schools, well, I think you should change the world and do science at home. And if you really want to be a scientist and you live somewhere that you can't be a scientist if you're a girl, you just need to change the world and change their minds.
Change the world and change their minds. And that's the view from Janet's Planet.